Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Let's choose for it.
Yeah, let's choose fingers for it. The odd finger's it. Ready?
One, two, three!
I lost.
No, Peter, you won.
Here we come, walk down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
It's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. So long before Peter Tork became a legendary part of the prefab phenomenon known as the Monkees, Peter was a well-respected musician, artist in the burgeoning New York folk and blues scene. His gift for playing many instruments, the bass, the guitar, keyboard, banjo, and French horn, generated high demand for his services. Peter knocked around for several hungry years in the mid-60s, hanging and performing with the likes of Stephen Stills of Crosby, Stills & Nash, Pete Seeger, Van Dyke Parks, among others. Now, that fateful call, which would change Peter's life forever, came in June of 65. He aced the audition for what was to become a groundbreaking multimedia project centered on a zany young rock-pop band stylized as the American answer to the Beatles, and Peter has never stopped working. The Monkees are celebrating its 50th anniversary this summer. They are on tour and have a new album out, first in 20 years, called Good Times, and will perform Saturday, June 11th at the venue at the Horseshoe Casino. And joining us to talk about his decades-long journey is Peter Tork. Peter, welcome in, my friend.
Dave, hi. How are you?
I am fabulous. Congratulations on 50 years of this iconic group. Pretty cool.
Well, all I did was not die.
Good for you. That's right. That's right.
It's an accomplishment. It's something, you know. it's really amazing. Much more important than my survival is the fact that this phenomenon known as the Monkees even has legs all these years later. Imagine a group, a 50th anniversary group, making a new album. That's just incredible. Mickey was thinking about this once. When we started off, if we'd gone to an act that was celebrating its 50th anniversary, you think about it for a split second, we'd be talking about somebody who was famous for the first time in 1916.
Yeah. Think about
Charlie Chaplin, early Charlie Chaplin silent movies or something, 50th anniversary. So.
Totally true. Totally true. And really, though, hearkening back, Peter, music's been a big part of your life since you were like in the third grade. Is that when you started playing the piano?
That'd be about right. Fourth grade, I guess. It's true. Music had been a part of my life even before that. I just always was interested in music and performing. I'm sort of an entertainer by birth. I don't even know how that happened, but there it is.
Very good. And you quickly picked up other instruments, too. I mean, you're not a one-instrument guy. I mean, you started doing that very early on, which is kind of key.
Well, I took piano when I was starting, like, in fourth grade, and a few years after that, I got a guitar for fun. That's what, you know, and then I was able to stand up and perform, which is kind of more fun than sitting at the piano, because I like to dance, even at my advanced age. I still have a few moves to bust. In high school, I graduated the first year of a new high school in this, and the music teacher came around and said, "It's a new year, everybody gets a chance. What do you want to take something up?" And I took up the French horn, played it for a year in high school and a couple of years in college, and I still have one, and I don't play it very often. You should play a lot if you want to keep your lip in shape.
Sure.
But my chops are not up on the French one. It's been great to have that. Something about the way music is made. An ex-girlfriend of mine said, "You have the passion and the art and the technical knowledge, and she was right. I have a bit of all of that. That doesn't mean I'm any good, of course, but it does mean that I've got the passion and the art and the technical. So.
But understanding all these different instruments really helps you understand music a lot better. I mean, then you're understanding other parts and what other people are doing when you're playing with them as well. So, I mean, it really does provide some great diversity in what you do.
Yes, exactly. That's the big deal about it all. I wrote a piece. A fellow I met, a piano player, asked if I would write a piece for piano and orchestra, and I did. I wrote a 7-minute piece of music that I heard performed by an orchestra in Kentucky called Orchestra Kentucky with a piano player, and I was able to assemble and write something pretty out there, modern, that was all because of all of that education and horns and strings and that stuff. Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And you set your sights pretty early in New York City on the folk music scene. Greenwich Village was the place for aspiring musicians really to get their start. And you hung around with a lot of famous friends back in the day.
The late great Richie Havens,
wow.
Of course, my man Steve Stills. Denny Doherty of Mamas and Papas was on the street in those days, as was Zal Yanofsky, also of the Spoonful, and Jose Feliciano, and scad of others. Richard Pryor was telling jokes at the Cafe Wa in those days.
Wow.
That was something. I have a routine of his that made me laugh so hard it makes me laugh to this day. I've never been able to make anybody else laugh with it.
That's awesome. But, I mean, think about that experience back then, just playing and getting your wits about you. And I know this is kind of what led your friendship with Stephen Stills, what led you to the audition with the Monkees. He auditioned for the show, and, you know, they're looking for four guys. And I was looking at the ad that was originally posted, Madness Auditions, folk and roll musicians, singers for acting roles, a new TV series, running parts for four insane boys aged 17 to 21, want spirited Ben Franks types, have courage to work, must come down for an interview.
What happened was Steve and I were the kids who looked alike in the Greenwich Village days. And Steve met one of the producers, at least that's what he told me. We were buds, you know, for years on the Village Street, and we were in a little group together for a bit. And he called me up and said, one day on the West Coast, he said, I met this guy, and you ought to try out for this thing he's doing. I said, what about you? And Steve said to me, well, they liked me well enough, but they didn't think that I would photograph well. And they asked me, did I know anybody who looked like me who had one sense of my talent? And I thought immediately of you, Peter.
That's nice. A little friendly ball bus thing. I like it.
Yeah, Steve had to settle for CSNY. He's never forgiven me.
Yeah, you just had to settle. I hear you. But almost 500 people auditioned for these roles.
Almost.
Isn't that crazy? And you and Mickey and Michael Nesmith and the late Davy Jones joined the group. You know, when you finally got the four of you into a room, did you all look at each other like, what are we doing here? Was there some chemistry from a personality standpoint when you first met?
We knew what each one of us was doing there. We wondered what the other ones were doing there. as a matter of fact, you know, now that I think about it, I remember that Michael was the only one who actually answered the ad. Davey had already been signed to Columbia, and Mickey heard about it through his agent. He was a young acting pro. He was the lead in a TV show called Circus Boy when he was like
eight or something like that.
And so he heard about it through professional channels, and I heard about it from Steven. Michael was the only one who answered the thing. I knew Mike from before. He had been the MC at what we called Hootenannies in those days. It was an open mic night, you know?
Yeah.
And Michael was just wonderful at that. He had such a sense of humor and a sense of how to do this thing. He kept the thing really alive. He was a great showman. And it took a while to get Mickey because, for starters, Mickey was like, I don't know what he was. His true comedic genius had not yet come to the fore. And I did not know what he was up, what they liked about him. I didn't get it. But I knew what Mike could do, and I could see Davey instantly. You know, he was just so full of energy and chipper and cocky. And but it did take a while to find out who each other was. It's true.
But, you know, you were a vocalist. You played the bass, the guitar, a keyboard, banjo, a little bit on the drums. Mickey played the guitar. Nesmith was more on the bass. Davey played the drums. But they started assigning instruments based on how you guys looked on screen rather than really what your true talent was.
Well, kind of. Mickey sort of found himself cast as the drummer. I had to tell him how to play drums.
Yeah.
I gave him his first drum lesson. But the thing about the Monkees, I love the joke about called the Prefab Four.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite jokes. But in fact, during the shooting of the pilot, we had never played together before. I taught Mickey how to play a couple of quick drum beats, and during a lull in the shooting, we began to play together in front of people, and they got up and danced. And we'd never played together before.
Wow.
We'd never rehearsed. We never knew what we could do. We just began to do, you know, Johnny B. Goode and the little, you know, blues rock tunes of the day. But it was there from the start. And then 20 years later, 30 years later, we played together. It was still there. And I'm sorry Mike won't be joining us because just Mickey, Mike, and I could go out as a rock trio. And do an hour show without, and you wouldn't know there was any deficiencies.
All right, more with Peter Tork of the Monkees and their 50th anniversary next on 720 WGN.
I am kicking you out.
Hey, what's the matter? We paid the rent the 1st of September.
Yeah, but that was for July.
It rings and I rise, wipe the sleep out of my eyes. My shaven razor's cold and it sings. Cheer up, sleepy Gino. What can it mean to a daydream?
It's Dave Player on 720 WGN, and we're talking about the 50th anniversary of the Monkees with one of the legendary band members and actors, Peter Tork. Very, very early on, those first couple albums, you know, you guys weren't really playing together on the albums, and I know that was a point of contention, obviously very much in the beginning. How long did it take for producers? I know Don Kirshner was the head of music for Screen Gems. He brought in Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart into the project and created a record label and all this. But how long did it take for the producers to finally say you guys can play together and start really making music together?
After the second album.
Yeah.
The third album was called Headquarters, and that's us playing music on it. I've often regretted that it came to a kind of a contention thing with Don Kirshner, because I particularly did treasure the fact that he had his finger on the pulse of American pop music, and I'm sorry that we had to part ways in order, 'cause all I wanted to do was to be the musicians in the studio. I wanted us to be playing this stuff, because that's what I always wanted to do and be. And to this day, it's one of my favorite pastimes, is making music in the studio.
Sure.
And rehearsing with the guys and what have you. So it's too bad. There's a lot of ways in which that didn't go the way I'd hoped. But finally, we did make an album ourselves, the four of us, basically, with a very little help from other people. And the third album, Headquarters, which did not sell as well as the second, but it did last longer. It had a much shallower drop off, much slower
on the charts.
Slower,
right? Yeah,
you know what I mean. They stayed on the charts longer than the second album. And I think that if you listen to that album, it's not as smooth and it's not as proficient as the first two. But the fact that it's the four of us and we're having a good old time, I think that shows, and I think it paid off in the end.
Well, and I know you guys always look at the first two albums to be like a soundtrack from the series, more or less, until you made the first album. But, you know, the first album came out in October of 66, just after the series debuted, and you were selling records all along that first year faster than the Beatles when they first debuted. That's pretty amazing.
There certainly was a period between when the Stones and the Beatles had not put out an album for a little while, and we outsold them for a bit. We were outselling the two of them combined. But yeah, the Monkees as a phenomenon. And the interesting thing to me is that the single Clarksville debuted before the TV show came out and was selling before anybody saw the TV show. So the, you know, a lot of the stuff about the Monkees' music is a little misplaced, if not downright wrong, depending on how you look at it.
Now, you were also, you know, while you were recording and playing music together, you were also on the set like 10, 12 hours a day all summer long, getting this series going. And you essentially were filming, you know, it was a comedy, but you were, you know, these were the first real music videos almost 20 years before MTV debuted.
Actually, interestingly enough, when I was a kid in the village, before any of this happened, there was a thing called Scopitone, which was a jukebox showing 16 millimeter film cassettes with songs of and visuals. It was actually, that was to me the beginning of MTV, Scopitone. And, you know, where you paid a nickel or a dime at a jukebox in those days, and you had to pay like 50 cents to get a film going, a movie going. And it didn't go very far or very well, but there was there's the real precursor to MTV.
You know, did you enjoy making the series? I mean, this, you guys seemed like you were always having fun, but you were a musician at heart. I mean, was it fun to film this comedy every week?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
You know, I actually was an actor. I've acted in, I mean, not like Davey, who was on Broadway, you know, like, oh man, Broadway, holy cow. But I was, you know, all through junior high and high school and college and amateur theatricals around town. I was always into it. I was the, in college we did Hamlet. I was the character called the Player King. That's one of the troupe of actors who comes in and where Hamlet says the play is the king, wherein I'll set a trap to catch the king. Well, the play he sets has me, my character, the Player King, saying, among other things, anon he finds him striking too short at greets. His antique soul rebellious to his arm lies where it falls, repugnant to command.
It's amazing what you remember, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole thing.
That's pretty cool. All right, more with Peter Tork of the Monkees and their 50th anniversary next on 720 WGN.
Love is only true in fairy tales, and for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me, that's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face.
It's Dave Player on 720 WGN, and we're talking to Peter Tork on the 50th anniversary of the Monkees. You know, you guys had a ton of guest stars on the show. I mean, people wanted to be on the show. It was only, and it's crazy when I think about this, that it was only on for a couple of years and 58 episodes, but there was people clamoring to be on the show. They wanted to be a guest star on the show.
I clamored to have Janis Joplin on. She and I had met before the Monkees, and before Big Brother became really big, and gotten along pretty well, and I thought, gee, it'd be great to have her come on, and it never happened. I don't know why not. Cass Elliott, too, should have had Cass.
The series won two Emmy Awards in 67 for Outstanding Comedy Series, beating out some of the classic shows that were running for years, Outstanding Directorial Achievement in Comedy. So you got the Emmy Awards. You're making big albums. I mean, this must have been a pretty exciting time. Was it a little overwhelming at the time?
Well, yes and no. I don't know how to describe it. Part of it was just, okay, here's what you're going to do next, boys.
Yeah.
Be ready for this. Here comes the limo at 8. Be dressed this way. Be at the show. You know, be at the studio at 7:30. We're going to the studio now. And you know, we were pretty well shepherded, and that was the important part. We certainly couldn't have done any of this on our own without the huge the huge thing. I mean, gosh, imagine writing a TV show. I thought somebody had to write a new half-hour comic episode every week.
Yeah.
It took four teams of two each, plus a couple of other talented writers, to get out 58 episodes. It took them, you know, you got five teams. It takes 5 weeks to write a half-hour comedy episode. I mean, we wrote some songs. Mickey wrote some stuff. Mike wrote some stuff. I wrote some. Even Davey later on came to write some very interesting, lovely little things. So we enjoyed the opportunity, but if it hadn't been for the huge cast of songwriters and comedy writers, there would have been no Monkees. The Monkees are absolutely a phenomenon of a huge... Well, I don't know about huge. We're not talking Disney here, but
yeah.
But a substantial business operation, an entertainment show business operation.
Well, and you're going on concert tours as well at this time. Jimi Hendrix opened for the Monkees for about, I don't know.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. Poor man. I don't know. Although it's not a bad career move for a heavy rock musician to get fired off of a bubblegum act.
What do you remember about Hendrix?
Well, what I remember about him is that he was one of the sweeter guys I've ever known.
Yeah.
He was, you expect people, artists run the entire gamut from people who are just so wrapped up in their own world that you can talk to them and they barely register that you're talking to them at all, much less they pay attention. Jimmy was at the other end of that spectrum. When you're talking with him, he turned and he faced you and he waited to hear what you were saying. And then he responded to the content, not to the cues that he thought he was taking. Mm-hmm. He really paid attention. I was working on some guitar at the time and I talked a little bit about guitar technique with him. And he said, yeah, yeah. And think about this. And here's that thought. And I took his thoughts home and became much the better instrumentalist for having had a few conversations with him here and there.
That's pretty cool. What was more fun for you at the time, Peter? Was it the TV show, recording albums, or was it the live performances?
I can't tell you that. Everything was wonderful in its own way.
Yeah.
Like I said, I love watching people make television. I loved working in the studio when we were making the TV show, I was next to the cameraman talking about focal length, for goodness sake.
That's cool. And, yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And the yeah. camera work and photography in general, as was Mickey. In the studio, I wanted to know, well, why are we recording at 15 IPS, not 30 IPS? And how are we, what's 4-track and how do you sync? What's self-sync? And all the various ways that of the technical stuff, that stuff fascinated me. And so I just, I was there for everything. I just was right there. Let me know more about it. How are you doing it?
You were learning along the way. Yeah, you were totally learning along the way. Do you remember when the Monkees met the Beatles? Remember that moment?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Our staff and their staff had managed to come to some, we had agreed to meet at a place called The Speakeasy, a club in London that included a back room where the Beatles hung out often in London. They just went there of an evening just to hang out. And we were invited, and they were expected, and they came in. We were there, I think... first thing that happened was Paul came in, and we all just said, hi, how are you, shook hands, and good to meet you, and that stuff. And then John and George came in plunking a ukulele, singing Mickey Dolenz to the Hare Krishna chant.
And
Ringo never showed that night, but I had met George briefly before the Monkees. And we renewed our acquaintance, and he took me and a friend of mine to Ringo's the next day. And so I went and met Ringo. Ringo, by the way, is the one of those guys that I was just felt most calm about and with. He was he had no agenda. You know, the Beatles, God, they were the Beatles, and it was a big deal being one of the Beatles, and Ringo, you know, hey, it was life, you know, whatever's happening. So I enjoyed Ringo a whole lot. I've had the pleasure of hanging with him on many occasions since. I always found him to be a very present kind of person, aware of the moment, not lost in his own thoughts.
Wow, very cool. And you were doing that. Six more albums came. The TV show ran two seasons. Then came the movie Head, co-written and co-produced by Bob Raffleson and Jack Nicholson. It had quite a cult following over the years.
It's been interesting. I don't know about that, to tell you the truth. I have my own thoughts about the movie. I have mixed feelings about it along a lot of lines, but it sure has held some people's interest, which is great. I mean, it was maybe the only movie we could have made, but it was the movie we made.
So the Monkees have inked their place in history in rock and roll. Such a controversy over the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I just don't understand. The Monkees, absolutely, 50 years in the making, belong in there.
Well, I don't have much to say about it one way or another. You know, I've been given to understand that it's Jan Wenner's baby, and he says yay or nay, and he has been saying nay all these years, and that's, you know, if he's got his hands on the wheel and he says no, then the answer is no. And I'm not really terribly fussed about it. I think I would vote for us to go in if somebody gave me the vote, but I don't see it as a major tragedy or a serious reflection on us or anything else along those lines. You know, it's just Jan being Jan, and let it be, say I.
Well, during a four-year period, the Monkees released 185 songs on 9 stereo albums, 5 mono albums, and 9 non-LP singles. I was born in 67, so I discovered the Monkees on Saturday mornings. I think my first 45 was a cardboard cutout from the back of a cereal box before I got the Greatest Hits album. Rediscovered again in syndication, MTV, Nick at Night, now on Antenna TV. It's really never gone off the air. And when we met backstage in 2011, when you were at the Genesee Theater playing with Mickey and Davey, it was my kid's first concert ever, almost 50 years later, and it was pure entertainment. And Peter and Mickey will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Monkees at the venue at the Horseshoe Casino in Hammond, Indiana, right across the border on Saturday, June 11th. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com. For the Monkees, visit Monkees.com. And for Peter, PeterTork.com. And you can still get albums and the complete TV series on DVD and catch classic episodes on Antenna TV. Peter, thank you so much again. A thrill talking to you about this amazing 50-year journey.
Thank you very much, David. I hope we can do it again in another 50 years.
Sounds good, sir. All right. Much more ahead on 720 WGN. She makes me laugh.